How old is she?
Excuse me?
Around 14 months.
She's breathtaking.
Thank you. It's Nicole, right?
I know who you are.
Wanna go home, sweetie?
June Osborne? So that's Nicole. Baby Nicole.
Get your boots out there. Can I go home?
I always wanted a girl. Both of my pregnancies were boys.
We're gonna go home. I need to go home.
You're so lucky you were in Gilead. Now you have this beautiful, precious, healthy little angel.
Hey, hey, do not touch my daughter.
But she's God's
back
child.
Up. You get the fuck away from her.
You don't deserve her, slut, whore.
Did you see me? Huh? Fuck you!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Daphne.
And I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jason.
And this is the Handmaid's Tale podcast.
This week, we're covering The Handmaid's Tale, Season 5, Episode 4, Dear Offred. Thought we were finished with Offred.
Oh, I don't even like hearing that name.
I know.
No.
What a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
It makes me cringe.
Get an envelope that says Offred on it.
Ugh. Ugh. Oh, it just took me back.
Like, one word is the worst insult you could ever throw at her.
I mean, she's asking to be shot in the face, basically.
She is.
I have some thoughts on that.
Oh, man, do I too. There's a lot of thoughts from this one, I think. So we should probably just jump right into it.
Okay.
So, Jason, it's your turn. Give us what you got.
Okay, my first point is called The Appeal of Serena, and it's a bit of a long one. Here we go. So I was thinking about why people support Serena and the ideals of Gilead, and I mean, it all started because of this really sharp drop in the global birth rate, and that caused many to look to religion and the sons of Jacob for answers. But I think it's also wrapped up in this sort of extremist religious moralism and superiority. Luke asks Serena, why are you here? And she goes, I'm here to spread his word and show people that there's a better way to live. And so I think in her way, the fertility problem, in her view, the fertility problem is a symptom of immoral or ungodly behavior. And the whole handmaid system is built on subjugating women deemed to be morally compromised. You know, if you're immoral, then you have to be subjugated. And if you're fertile, you can be a handmaid. And so, you know, I've been accusing Serena of being one of the causes of Gilead because she was this outspoken religious activist and she wrote the book, A Woman's Place. And she was married to one of the chief architects of Gilead and one of the main guys that, you know, took it over, staged the coup and everything. But then also, she clearly didn't approve of women not being able to read or write. So then I start to question, all right, how much of what Gilead ended up being did Serena actually have in mind and was she on board with? And I was trying to find out how much we know about what was in that book that she wrote. And I came upon this kind of interesting comment from somebody on Reddit. I didn't catch the name, but I'm going to read it. She, I think it's a she, might be he, says, I, for one, am truly curious what was in the book. I can't imagine Serena Joy advocating husbands beating their wives because of something in the Bible. When I think of a woman's place as a book, I think of her advocating for women to work less and to be at home more, having children, like taking care of children, cooking, cleaning, making the house a home, etc., being more domesticated. And as for her second book that she wanted to write, with reproduction as a, quote, moral imperative, the key word is moral, not imperative. I think she wanted to encourage women to have children to repopulate mankind by having women realize it's their duty, quote, but not with rape. And I'm pretty sure the whole raping handmaid thing was created by three men in a car. So I read that and I was thinking, okay, maybe I've been too hard on her. Maybe that person has a point. But then I started thinking, like, once Gilead was fully in place, Serena seemed fully in support of the handmaid's system, for one, to the point where she threw June on the floor just because she was frustrated that June wasn't pregnant when she thought she was, after repeated rapes by her husband, Fred, and with the intention of stealing this woman's baby. And then, you know, also when Fred and the other sons of Jacob plotted to slaughter all the members of Congress and blame terrorists, this false flag operation, and then they actually carried that out. If I remember right, Serena was fully in support of all that. So whether she knew exactly what Gilead would have been like, I do think her activism and probably her ideals are at least to some degree responsible, and her support of the sons of Jacob helped to bring Gilead about. And then after the fact, she stood mostly in full support of, you know, the parts that she didn't support were more about her own status. But when it came to other people suffering, she didn't care. And she still seems to be in full support of it. Luke says, "You could help us get Hannah back." And Serena says, "Agnes is happy. She has fit and loving parents, just as the good Lord intended. Who am I to question God's will?" And I mean, you might say, well, she's just getting under Luke's skin, but I think she believes what she's saying, that the child is where she belongs according to God's will. And I think she thinks she's doing God's work. And Mark's trying to get her to become an American citizen. And she says, "I'm not an American citizen." And then I thought she was going to say, "I'm a Gilead. I'm a citizen of Gilead." But no, she says, "My allegiance is to God." And so she thinks Gilead is an expression of God's will. And by spreading Gilead's ideals around the world, she believes she's spreading God's word. And I think most pro-Gilead people think that's what you need to be able to continue the human race. But like I said, it's also about this sort of self-righteousness, feeling like we have the answers and everyone else is wrong. And I think when you think you have the creator of all reality on your side, then it can become easy to rationalize pretty much anything. And on top of that, this episode, Serena mentioned to Lawrence that Gilead's the only country on the planet that has had an increase in live births. So they have some evidence that what they're doing is working, and that will like ground them more deeply and firmly in their idealism. But the problem is that when one group decides what's morally right and then judges everyone else by that standard, and then they implement harsh consequences for failing to meet those standards. Like, June married a man who'd been divorced, and so she was judged immoral and forced to be raped repeatedly, to lose her identity, to wear blinders. That shit just kills me, you know? And Serena supported it all. And I was looking at, you know, that kind of stuff happens in the real world. I know you guys know about this too. There was an article in the LA Times about what's happening in Iran right now. I'm going to read part of it. Mahsa Amini, who's 22, died last week after she was detained by Tehran's morality police, accused of not wearing her hijab properly. Days of street protests in numerous Iranian cities have turned deadly as protesters have burned their headscarves and cut off their hair in defiance of strict dress codes. Quote, "It's a matter of feminism. Everyone should understand that women are fighting for their freedom," said Niazmandi, one of the hundreds of protesters who gathered outside the Wilshire Federal Building in Westwood on Wednesday night. Quote, "They're going down the street trying to protest, and they're being shot down," she said of the people in Iran. "If you see the videos over there, they don't care if you're a woman or not. They don't care if you have a hijab. They just want to crush you down." And according to the United Nations Human Rights Council, videos have surfaced showing women being hit with batons, thrown into police vans, and slapped in the face for not completely covering their hair. And that's no worse than anything that Serena is a stand for. Any of the things that she's advocated for are worse than a lot of that. And I think that Gilead believers think that people living by other morals other than their own was what led to the drop in the birth rate. But the solution was to force their morals on everyone. And I thought, what would be an alternative solution? You know, I was trying to brainstorm, like, financial incentives for fertile people to get pregnant and give it up for adoption if they don't want the child, or women donating eggs or freezing embryos. You know, my son was an in vitro baby, Bodhi, and all of this done on a voluntary basis. Just, yes, changing behaviors, but by voluntary basis with incentives. And there could even, they could try some voluntary organized hookups or something, you know? But anyway, I don't know. Serena has been getting some compassion and I do not share it. And I wanted to make that point.
I don't share it either. I mean, if your religion thinks that systematic rape is okay, then there's something wrong with your religion. And if that's what we need to perpetuate the human species, then let it all die.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not saying that either one of you supports that, by the way. I'm not trying to say that.
No.
I hope you didn't take it that way.
No, I don't. Not at all. Okay. No, I saw the stuff coming out of Iran this week, and I thought immediately of Margaret Atwood and the fact that she repeatedly says that nothing in her book is really fiction.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, keeps proving true. And although some of our countries seem to evolve, the world as a whole continues to not.
Yeah, it's scary, and we'll talk about it, but just seeing elements of Gilead seeping into Canada, and it's just like, man, you know, or they have a freaking whole center for advocating for Gilead. It's like, wow, that's because Canada's a free country. They will put this, they will allow this center that will, could potentially undermine itself. It's scary as hell.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think sometimes sometimes when we discuss some of June's tactics, I'm sometimes hard on her for being ready to rage all the time. But I think she might, in this case, I don't blame her for wanting to take Serena out. I mean, she's right. If you don't squash them down, they are going to do this in Canada. It is going to happen. One of the things that resonated with me was when June and Moira were talking, and June says to Moira, Luke doesn't remember that these things didn't work last time. Like, the ideas that he has to try to do it the right way, to stop them the right way, it didn't work the first time. So
yeah.
You know June is thinking that.
I mean, yeah, they lived it. They lived the collapse of their own country. And so they're going to be freaking out seeing this stuff in
Canada.
And
they lived the mistakes of not getting out in time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not nipping it in the bud earlier.
And they're just watching it happen all over again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Luke's thing did work this time. That was kind of cool. But who knows how much big of an impact that would have. But I also think killing Serena, it would probably have a big impact on June. Although June gets away with everything, but, you know, you'd think she'd lose her family.
$88 fine, Jason.
Right, exactly.
Yep, for a finger.
Shoot her. Maybe it goes up to $100 fine. But anyway, it might just make Serena a martyr and make the cause more powerful. You know, you never know.
Exactly. You have to be careful because it's a fine line. If she did that, there would be people, I think, that would support June. I mean, because obviously outside that center, there were two groups of people fighting and arguing about what's right and wrong. So, you know, there would be people that support June. However, I think that you're right, Jason. I think she would just be made a martyr and that would make it worse. You can't kill her because you do it. It's creating someone for them to even idolize more.
I mean, I don't know, but I think the way to win is with win the war of ideas and and policy and stuff like that. But I don't know, man. The world feels so shaky right now. Who knows what works?
Well, I think, too, you really can't. They brought out the letters and that generated a lot of outrage and rage in general. But I think that you can't just think that that's enough. Sometimes people need to be reminded over and over again of things that are happening. And so the messaging, it's marketing too. I mean, you have to keep it in the front of people's minds. or they're going to start to forget.
They'll become numb to it or forget. And it's interesting. I'm sorry for jumping a little bit all over, but I'm just going to touch on it that, you know, Lydia is trying to be more compassionate with the handmaids. And if she, if what she's doing works, then there will be less outburst and people trying to kill other people or themselves among the handmaids, which would actually help Gilead's ideals proliferate around the world.
Yeah.
That's sort of ironic, I guess, or I don't know if it's ironic. Maybe that's what Lydia wants. I don't know.
I think Lydia isn't a survivor, and I think that's how she got into the situation she's in. And she wants to make it a little better. And I'm not defending her because she's a terrible person.
She deserves some credit for wanting to be more compassionate.
I think she and I have some more thoughts about Lydia. I can go into more detail later.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
All right. So Jason, do you have anything to add to that? I feel like that is a really like compelling start to this episode. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's all.
So let's move on to Wendy. What do you want to bring up for your first point?
I have something in a similar vein. We've gotten used to seeing what Gilead is like all these many years into the takeover from religious extremists. And we are now looking at a Gilead that seems to be on the cusp of some change. It's obviously been some blows stricken to Gilead recently, and they seem to be trying to change up things a little bit, though it's certainly not obvious which way it's going to go. Lydia and Joseph, as we talked about, have a somewhat honest conversation about the handmaid system. You can see that Lydia has somehow tricked herself into believing that the system had actual good intentions by religious zealousy, but that there were a few bad apples that just abused the system. But Joseph lays it on the line. He's nothing if not brutally honest. And he says the handmaid system is a farce, and it always was. It was always meant for wealthy men to have access to sex slaves. And I think that really kind of woke Lydia up, and she realized that she had been kind of surviving off of this idea in her head that it was a good system, just broken here and there, but it's not a good system.
Hmm. Yeah, the way he said that, these are pious men. They need to get their rocks off.
They need a little kink.
Yeah, they need a little kink. It's funny and also horrifying. And it just speaks to the hypocrisy of the men who run Gilead and go to Jezebel's, and they punish all these people for their moral, you know, failures, and yet they are much worse themselves. And I think that a lot of them might still actually buy into the religious justification for all of it and just compartmentalize everything. Others don't buy a word of it, and they just use it as a way to gain power. I think it could be both.
And I think even others just try to appear to live by it out of fear.
Yeah.
But so true to life. I mean, this is what happens. We have priests that sit up in church every week and then go and abuse children. I mean, it's everything that happens.
It is. And I don't want to come off like we're anti-religion. I think it can be that religion can lead to this kind of things. But if a religion is open and accepting, and it can be helpful in so many ways, you know, but I'm wary of when this is, like you said, the priests, there's so much of it. So
it's religion has to stop putting people in power, positions of power.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen the good that religion can do. I know I've talked about that before, where I work in hospice and I see churches come together and support people that need it so badly. And I've seen people dedicate their entire lives super selflessly to others. And that, you know, that really warms me and makes me happy about religion. But I worry that the bad outweighs the good.
Yeah.
I think too, it goes beyond religion. It's power. It's mm-hmm. being able to wield that power over other people. The commanders have it with their system. You've got different levels, like Nick's like a lower ranked commander. And then, you know, you have Mackenzie, who's very high ranked. It's this power and being able to hold it over your peers. But in addition,
moral power is.
Yeah.
And when the punishment is eternal damnation and you're scared to step out of the bounds of what the church says is morally right or not, to the point in Gilead where you could be hanged if you don't toe the line.
Right.
Then you're stuck.
I mean, Gilead is a map of religious persecution to me. That's what it represents. It's not religious persecution in the sense of people left England to come here and live in this country and to escape it. It's persecution. It's different. People are being persecuted for not being in the Gilead religion.
Usually when you say religious persecution, that means there's a minority group of people who have their own religion and they're persecuted because of it. But in this case, it's more like just everybody has the same religion. And if you're not a part of that, then you're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's people here, let's just say it, you know, in this country who want us all to have the same religion. And I'm like, fuck that. No, that's not what this country is.
No.
And they would argue with you that it is what this country is. That seems to be getting scarier and scarier.
Yeah. And I'm all for religious freedom, especially the freedom part. That part can't be lost.
That seems to be the part that is lost.
Yeah.
It's definitely lost in Gilead. There is no freedom
in Gilead. But I loved when Mark said, you're in Canada now. This is a free country. That was a warning to her, but it felt good to hear him say that.
Yeah. I think what the depressing thing is, the power that these men have to be able to rape women and want them to just be accessible for their abuse and torment and entertainment. Because I feel like they're not even, the handmaids are not necessarily even a person to them. They're a vessel for a child to be born, but they're also like a toy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like that's
the guy Putnam with his chocolate.
Yeah, I mean,
that's all I can think of.
They treat them even less than animals. I mean, it's really depressing to see.
Mm-hmm. And then when you see something like this story in Iran right now, it's like, this kind of shit is happening.
Yeah,
we don't want to get there. Let's not go there.
Yeah, and Lawrence disappointed me in this episode. I mean, I think he's playing a long game, but the fact that, I mean, told it like it is. He knows how the inner workings are.
I don't think he was saying that it's okay. I think he was just telling the truth.
Can't figure him out. I mean, I guess, he could practically know, no, that's not going to work, that they will not go for that. As much in maybe the part he's not saying is as much as I think that would be good. But the way he's playing it, it just seems like he's toeing the line for Gilead. So I know that's probably not right, but you can't tell.
The compassion. I expected more compassion from him.
Yeah.
And we didn't get it. And so it made me a little irritated. I'm like, fuck you, Lawrence. I know you're playing this game, but my God.
Well, he's not going to show that compassion to Lydia, though.
No,
They're adversaries.
They are.
Yeah.
I think they're aligned right only when it is going to help one or both of them.
Yeah.
Like, they only come together.
They don't trust each other.
Yeah. No. No. And we can't forget that we can't forget who Lydia is. Even if she does make changes and becomes a different person, that does not negate everything she's done.
I agree with so many people on that point. There's a lot of people.
Yeah.
But my point was about how we got to see where Gilead is now after all these years. But then in this episode, we also get a glimpse of what the beginning of Gilead probably looked like. We see a desperate woman recognizing June, telling her she doesn't deserve her daughter, that she's a slut and a whore. This reminded me of a section in the very beginning of the book where somebody grabs Hannah when she's just a little baby and before the Gilead takeover, because she just thought that God told her that was her baby. Kind of reminded me of that scene.
Mm. That was chilling.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like a typical in the playground, one mom or woman admiring another woman's cute baby. But as soon as she said, "That's Nicole, right?" or whatever, I'm like, oh, fuck. Mm-hmm. This is one of Serena's women.
Yep. And there's more and more of them, it seems. And yeah. I thought the therapist kind of was blowing off the woman's actions, minimizing them, stating that it could be caused by infertility trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I wonder if she's Canadian and she didn't live through, you know, the buildup of Gilead. So I just felt like she was minimizing the danger.
Yeah, she said it could be just from infertility trauma, eh? So I figure she's Canadian.
Yeah.
Nobody
yeah.
got that joke. That's all right.
I did. I did because I live funny. In. No, I live in Maine, and I'm not that far from the Canadian border. So
I would imagine that she's just blind to it because she hasn't lived through it. That's what you'd think, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think they really needed to get therapists that have an understanding of what people like June went through. I mean, even if they're working in a tandem with a therapist, that a Canadian therapist, there needs to be someone who gets it, because I don't think that this these tactics are going to help June.
They're just not on June's level. They want her to incorporate herself into society and move on with her life and all the things that I think it's way too late for that. But we see the hostility between the people protesting and the counter-protesters supporting Gilead. An aggressive man comes up. He's all in the woman's faces. He immediately tells them they need to obey. They need a real man to put them in their place. He gets physical, pushing one of the women and then punching Moira dead in the face. And that was scary to me, you know, like I've been following the whole Roe v. Wade and abortion protests in America. And this is sort of what that reminded I, you know, and even though it's not in person on social media, I see so many people like super aggressive and the comments that they make. I mean, I have seen on these like abortion debate threads so many men and women that are just like, you know, keep your legs closed and this wouldn't be a problem. And it just, it really is haunting with what's happening right now.
There's a lot of aggression in the country right now on a lot of different fronts. I was just seeing how fights on planes have gone up like 5 times in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Just people like punching,
flight attendants.
Each other and flight attendants, yeah.
And cruises and parties and it's just, I don't, and like, you know, even at work, like in a healthcare setting, people are violent. People are physically and verbally aggressive and assaulting healthcare workers. And it's just something that's happening, and it's quite scary to me. It almost makes you just not want to go out in public any longer.
I mean, this is corny, and I don't know, maybe it's a little self-serving or something, but I hope that you guys out there listening to us feel some connection with us and each other to where you feel a little better about humanity. I don't know if you do, but if you do, that'd be awesome.
Agreed.
I agree. Wendy, yeah. I agree.
What you said about keeping your legs closed, it takes me to high school dress codes and how so much is put on the girl to cover up because we don't want the boys to get excited.
And I still see that out there.
It's not okay.
How are we back here?
You can't put, I feel like a lot of this is put on women and it shouldn't be. This show just honestly fires me up about things because anytime I see something that reminds me or makes me like connected to what mm-hmm. is going on in this show, I just get so fired up about it that I, you know, finding the right words is hard sometimes.
I read like Bruce Miller saying something like, I'm just a storyteller. I, you know, if this is mirroring stuff that's going on in our society right now, it's coincidence. It's kind of interesting. I don't know why I brought that up, but I mean, he's tapping into something here for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll just end my point with, at some point in the episode, Moira says they have to play by the rules. And I thought, but isn't that how Gilead started? They suspended first one rule, then another rule. You know, they started by cutting off all women's financial assets. And it was just one step that led to another. And following the rules is, you know, didn't help Moira and June and Hannah. And so I don't know, maybe it's time to not follow the rules any longer, even in Canada.
Yeah. I mean, historically, if you think about it, following the rules has not worked out well.
And at the same time, I believe in our country and I feel protected by laws. I mean, you know, I wouldn't want to live in the Wild West. But no. I just worry that, you know, Luke and Moira's faith in following the rules and going about the proper procedures and everything, I can understand why you feel panicky and like, no, we need more than that.
Yeah.
Why June has a gun in the front yard or backyard buried under the snow. I mean, you get it. In this episode, seeing things play out, I just said, okay, June, I get it. I don't like your tactics sometimes, but I understand the frustration.
Absolutely. And Luke is understanding more and more, which is great to see them connecting over that. I mean, I think that you can do a lot without getting your gun and going to kill somebody, you know?
Yes.
Like, you can. And within the rules, you know, if you're, like you said, it's a marketing thing. And if you can reach the right politicians and things like that, I mean, you can affect change and get enough people on board. And so there's ways of affecting change, especially if, like, Gilead is this, like, it is frustrating this season because they're starting to get a better image, which is right where Bruce Miller wants us to be, like, no. But it can be, like I said, a war of ideas, too. You know, it doesn't have to all just be a bunch of rebels going into Gilead to steal Hannah back kind of thing, although that would be fun to see, too.
Oh, my gosh. Can you see Delta Force going in and getting Hannah? I mean, that's a movie from the 80s. I don't know if people ever saw it, but can you imagine Chuck Norris and Delta Force? I mean, come on.
You could send going the A-team in there.
The A-team, yes. Come on. We need to get that going again, Jason. That might solve a lot of problems. Oh my gosh. Mr. T. Oh my gosh, that would just be great.
I pity the fool who steals another woman's baby.
I'm down for that.
It sounds great. I feel like we've just come up with a great, you know.
Well, next time we talk to Bruce, we can launch.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm sure he'll love
it. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
Okay, so my first point is kind of tying into Luke's new understanding of the situation. Because we've talked previously about Luke and Moira wanting June to kind of move on, which is what this therapist seemed to, you know, let's just get back into things. But I feel like over the last two episodes, Luke has really started to reconnect with June and start to understand that she's right in a lot of ways. I really appreciated getting to see them connect in this episode, especially at the end when she's, you know, she's like, I didn't kill her this time, but I can't promise I won't next time. And he says, I can't promise either. Because yeah. I think him going to see Serena, he really got, he saw it. I mean, I feel like that was like the hammer down. There's I think the exclamation point.
Started with him too seeing Serena with Hannah on the screen. But yeah. then going to see her. Yeah.
Then going to see her and realizing, you know, what she, and listening to her tell him, you know, Agnes specifically. Agnes is with a loving family as God intended. You know that she did that to dig at him, but I think
absolutely, true.
Yeah, oh, she yeah. definitely believes
he's outmatched too. In a battle of getting under each other's skin. He can't win against her.
No, and his face. I mean, you could see. I mean, the tears welling up.
Yeah,
I'm glad that we got this episode. I feel like this was kind of a Luke-ish, like a Luke episode. We really got to see a lot from him.
He got to experience Serena. And get a little more understanding of just a tiny little taste of what June had to deal with for years.
Yes.
It feels like Luke's also crossing some lines and he's going to places that I don't think he originally intended to go.
No, I don't think he went there to tell Serena that his wife was going to kill her.
No.
I think that was a reactive because that she was an
that was an emotional reaction. That was definitely... Yeah, I'm not sure I would have said that, but yeah, probably I would have, though. I mean, you get fired up in that situation. Who knows what you're going to do? I mean, she was just with his daughter. She knows how to torment his wife without even saying a word.
Brings up Nick. Like, that whole thing, you know, well, you know, it's too bad you didn't have the courage. She didn't say it in these words, but to go in and try to... do something like June did, just basically calling him a wuss, you know, and then saying, but luckily, or she suffered a lot for that, but luckily she had Nick there to comfort her.
And you must have been happy. He had a way, she had a way of putting it that was just like, oh, you must have been so relieved that Nick was there to comfort her during this time.
And that's playing on, I'm sure Luke felt guilty every day he was in Canada, knowing that she was there and thinking that he shouldn't have left, he should have stayed, he should have thought, he should go back. And even though I think that he made the right decision, because he probably wouldn't be alive today if he had.
I don't
think
so.
But I'm sure, you know, that just is the it buttons to push. And she knows it.
Yeah. Oh, she knows.
I was impressed.
She knows exactly what to do. She is a chess master when it comes to dealing with people. She's a master manipulator. And I mean, she's starting to me. She's going to weasel her way into the men of Gilead. Like, honestly, if you think about it, and this is what I thought about when she was first talking with Lawrence about what she wanted. And wanting to meet with these people to show, you know, to, because she's kind of got this celebrity status now. So she's got a bargaining chip. And I think she's going to, you know, try to manipulate Lawrence into giving her what she wants. Frankly, Gilead, in the end, may wish they'd never given her this role, because I think she's going to cause so much more work and headache for them that they're going to wish they hadn't done it. However, it makes for really great TV.
What do you think is going to be the headache for Gilead?
Whatever the barrier they put on her, she's going to push it further. And she's going to manipulate them. I mean, Serena very well could manipulate the downfall. I mean, her manipulations could cause Gilead to fall apart. Probably not, but it could happen. I mean, inadvertently. If it does, it's going to be inadvertently. It's not going to be because she wanted it to happen, because I don't think she wants Gilead to fall.
No.
Or anything.
But where she doesn't fit with Gilead is, at least the current people in power don't want women to have any power.
Yeah.
And she wants power. And so, yeah, that those two don't match up.
Yeah. So she's, but I think she's going to continue to push and get what she can out of it.
She gets what she wants so far.
She has a lot of potential. They're still fighting a war on the Canadian borders. And mm-hmm. if they can conquer Canada from the inside out, yeah. you know, the more support she gets, the mm-hmm. more her popularity grows in Canada, the more important she's going to become.
Yep. I feel like she can negotiate. Mm-hmm. It's not just manipulation, it's negotiation.
Yeah. Wow, this episode really, I mean, we saw the beginnings of her having some support in Canada, but I didn't really feel it until this episode with that guy getting in, hitting Moira in the face and all this stuff, you know, Canada letting them have this cultural center. And it really feels oppressive and scary. And this is going to be my last episode. Sorry, guys.
No, we're not going to. Don't you worry. We're not letting Jason go anywhere. It's interesting, though, because Serena did. I feel like she didn't trust Tuello and his government to keep her safe. She knows Gilead can keep her safe. Barely. She just believes in it. Barely. But this Shaw guy, this Ezra Shaw,
creepy.
I don't think.
As fuck.
His looks, the exchange glances between him and Tuello, it's almost like Shaw looking at Tuello was like, I know what you want. You're not going to get it. And I'm here to stand between you and what you want. So get the fuck out.
I thought he was a cool character. I mean, I don't like his ideals at all or what he stands for, but the way the actor played it, he seemed really solid and just like, the kind of guy that gets shit done, you know, and takes care of business. And it was interesting to watch until the end when June just like could have killed Serena right in front of him. And they were doing it in slow motion, but that made it seem like he was just like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. But anyway,
I'm shocked he didn't get in front of her, because I feel that we were led to believe his character is like live or die Gilead. And to me, that means jumping in front of Serena and protecting her.
Like a Secret Service.
He did nothing. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't really protect her. So yeah, my point was about Luke, but I feel like we've kind of transitioned into the Luke and Serena exchange. And yeah.
I'll just add on to that a little bit. I thought Luke and June came together in this episode.
Literally.
Like we haven't seen them before.
That's another joke that no one got. It's okay.
What did you say?
He said literally.
He said they came together. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I think they were honest. I feel like there's a new level of honesty, raw honesty between the two of them that we haven't seen before. Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, before she felt really connected to Nick and passionate with Nick. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we talked about how that's because they shared this trauma together. And now that Luke is becoming a little more angry and prone to violence, it's twisted, but I feel like it makes them feel more connected because they understand each other better. They're coming from a more similar place. And I loved seeing them together. And that was a beautiful sequence. And that was a cool to hear that remix of an old Fleetwood Mac song in the background.
The Chain. Yeah. Yeah, I like that as well. I think that I wonder if it had anything to do with Nick. I mean, June telling Nick she wanted him to be happy. Maybe June has, like,
Let go of it a little bit
so that she can allow herself to be with her husband and reconnect with him Because I just get this feeling before that she wasn't in that frame of mind.
I thought that relationship was over.
Yeah, I did too. I think they're meeting in the middle somewhere. I think also Luke is just coming to the conclusion that he can't control her actions.
Right.
And he has to accept whatever happens.
And try to be a little more on that wavelength. Although he is perpetually the one to say, I get it. But if you do that, you're going to lose your daughter and never get Hannah back. So he's trying to also inject some of that practicality in there.
Yeah,
too.
He's the conscience, I think. Yeah. He's kind of trying to be her conscience. Saying,
hey, I might shoot her too if you kind of believe him. So he's moving more towards her.
It makes me think that he's trying to normalize that it would going to shoot Serena. Like, oh, I could, you know, I can't say I won't do it too. Like, it would be a normal thing to do. And I think in some cases, maybe that might help. I mean, June is just the trauma that woman has been through. We all know. I think he's just trying to get on her level, like be where she is, meet her where she is, instead of trying to bring her up to where he is. He's just like, well, this isn't working. So I'm going to go to her level.
It's that maybe it's a conscious effort to do that. But as we also said, things have changed for him a bit. He saw Hannah on the screen with Serena. He had a personal experience with her. So it's a bunch of different things.
He's not as much of a bystander as he was to everything.
He's had more time with June.
Yeah.
Well, I think June had told him and tried to get him to understand Serena. And now I think he gets it.
Yeah.
Like, Serena is everything my wife said.
Right.
Because I think he was trying to... I just think he was trying not to believe, or it can't be as bad as that. It can't be, you know, he's thinking June really thinks it's this bad, but you know, it can't be as bad as that. Yeah. I need to try to get her to move past it. And then he sees Hannah on the screen with Serena and that's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, it might not even be a fully conscious thing. Sometimes if you don't have an experience of what the person is talking about, you can try to be understanding, but until you actually have an experience of it, you don't really get it as much as you want to, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes you have to go through it yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moving back to Jason, what do you have for your next point?
My next one's called Mark the Fucking Disappointment. Apologies to Wendy.
Yes.
All right. I'm ready to fight.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. We might not fight, but, Luke, Moira, and June were pretty hostile towards Mark, and that really upset me at first because he's helped them a lot. And I was like, why? But, you know, especially watching a second time, I started to get it. Like, well, Luke's saying, you were this close to her, meaning Hannah, you didn't do anything. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? I'm one man in this. What am I going to do? Grab her and run? Come on. But, you know, they want their daughter back. That's their main thing. And like Moira's saying, you know, you got to play by the rules, but no official is helping them. And Mark is like the face of that, the officials. So he's frustrated. Luke is frustrated that no one's really helping them, and he takes it all out on Mark. But also, you know, Mark tells them Serena's no longer in our custody, and Luke's like, you let that happen? And they see that she's had so much freedom under his watch. And he tells them about this Gilead Center, a cultural center where Serena will be allowed to advocate for Gilead values. That's fucked up.
Oh my God.
and Luke's like, get the fuck out of my house. And I kind of don't blame him for that. It's not totally fair, but he's so lax. But they also sense that he's lax with Serena, and June senses that Mark let Serena walk all over him. And June didn't even have to say anything, and Mark got defensive. Well, she has no standing. She's restricted to Gilead property. She can't even drive a car. And June just goes, I warned you about her. You wouldn't listen. You're such a fucking disappointment. And we saw earlier that when Serena asked Mark if the Canadian government would be watching her, he goes, oh no, they don't anticipate the need for round the clock surveillance. He just tells her everything, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm a little disappointed in him too. He had this savior complex and he forgot who Serena was. And that's another reason why I wanted to remind myself by creating that first point, who she is. And Mark was a fool to think that she could be anything else than that. So I kind of get them being disappointed in him. I think he's a good man for sure, and he has helped them a lot. But it was an interesting development.
We had a listener who wrote a very lengthy feedback on Mark and Nick, and okay, it cool. really spoke to me, and I think you'll appreciate it, Jason. So when we get to that, I mean,
do you want to just read it now?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, it could
I'll
the
read
discussion.
The Mark part. How's that? And we can save cool. the Nick part because I know.
Okay.
So this is from Jody Morell. And she says, "Hi, Jason, Daphne, and Wendy. I wanted to offer a slightly different perspective on both Tuella and Nick. I worked in the intelligence community for quite a few years, behind a desk. I'm not even remotely cool or anything. I do have a certain set of skills, but
you're a spy. Admit it.
Oh, my gosh.
But desk skills, not field skills.
Right. Okay, sure.
And she says, for Tuello, he's intelligence. He's field intelligence. He's essentially CIA. And those guys are trained. Even their analysts know how to get information out of you that you didn't want to share. Applying this to Tuella and the way he is with Serena, they have fantastic chemistry. And when they first meet, he can see that she's a strong woman who's been deprived of power since Gilead rose. He is also aware of her history and the fact that Serena built Gilead with Fred. They did it together, and it all started with her book called A Woman's Place. But Tuella assesses Serena and offers her a dynamic with him where she feels like she has some power back. He begins small when she's in Canada with Fred and manages to build to the extent that when he offers her a way of communicating with him, she takes it. The whole way through the series, this is their dynamic. The dynamic he created for her, which makes her think she has him. That he will do anything for her. And it seems he does. He gets her access to Nicole in Canada and so on until she seems to bully him into letting her bury Fred in Gilead. But think about this for a second. Very little information about Gilead has gotten out. He's been relying on unconfirmed refugee reports for years, and now he's sitting in the lobby of a commander's house, watching their interactions, observing the way their house works, the way the men and women separate. He's able to catch Commander Lawrence and have a conversation. We can see they live with armed guards in and around their houses. He can observe the position of the Marthas, the handmaids, the drivers. This is an intelligence goldmine, and Tuella made it happen because Serena thinks she can get whatever she wants out of him. And in episode 1 of season 5, when Tuella goes to see June and tells her she did a bad thing that needed to be done, he told her that because he understands, because he has done bad things that needed to be done as well. Tuella is working for the American government. Serena is working for herself. The commanders are working for Gilead. Nick is working for his love of Nicole and June. Motivation is the key. Tuella is an impeccable agent, and I have no doubt he has an extensive and successful history of field operations. I love him. I think he's brilliant.
I think that could be true, and I hope it is true. I think it's probably a very charitable interpretation of the events that we've seen on screen, but I don't know.
I
hope you're right. Yeah, it's interesting. If that's true, that would be really, really cool.
Thank you so much, Jody, for that in-depth
character.
Fun to hear.
That's such cool insight into
like, I don't know if the writers of the show know about all that, is the thing.
Yeah.
Well, they need to.
I don't know.
Yeah, they need to listen to us. And yeah, exactly. Here's how you can save Mark's character. Come on.
They're so smart, though. The people behind this show are so smart that I feel like they did this research. Like, they knew what they were doing when they were putting this together. I have to believe that. Again, I have a lot of faith in Bruce Miller and the writers.
I mean, so do I. But it wouldn't be an uninteresting story if this guy just simply let himself get caught up in his admiration and what's the word when you really like somebody, you know, just his being in love with Serena. That would be an interesting story too. You know, we're all flawed, so I like flawed characters. And they don't all need to be badasses.
I like the idea that it's both. That's
it could be both. Yeah. It's got to be a little bit of
which makes
former,
it him worrying him with his own self.
Right
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they've touched on that. Like when she said to him, "You're not at all spying on us, right?" And he goes, "Oh, no, of course not."
No.
So, you know, they like, are thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I do have to say that at the end of the episode, when is it Alana, the wife, when Serena gets mm-hmm. to the house and Alana is down on her knees touching Serena's belly and we get to see Serena's face, I'm thinking, when are you going to call Mark Twello to come save you? Because this this looks like this could be the wackadoo house.
When really? When that happened, there was such a preamble to that scene. You know, like you heard somebody walking down the stairs. I was just, my mind was racing.
Yeah, who's it going to be?
Yeah.
Who is it? Who is it?
Yeah. I was thinking Nick or... Fred or
it was a W, so you know, yeah. Might have heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we don't know this. She's Wyan Wheeler's. No, Ryan Wheeler's spouse, and I think they're both new characters, right? But it looks like they have a little piece of Gilead, right? Right there in Canada.
Yeah. That made me nervous. That little piece of Gilead in Canada.
I didn't really know what to make of it.
Yeah.
She seemed just like another Serena fangirl.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of twisted to me. And then when she put her hands on her belly, I was just like,
yeah.
Oh no.
That wasn't good.
This is not going to go well. Serena's face, seriously. I think she wondered, what the fuck did I get myself into? And two, you have to think she's thinking, who can get me out of this?
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
It's a scary place. I would not want to be there. So, let's move on to Wendy. What is your point that you want to bring up?
I'll talk about Janine and Lydia.
Awesome.
I really saw a shift in the power dynamic between these two. It seems that Janine isn't afraid of Lydia any longer. She's really being more honest with Lydia and... belligerent with Lydia than we've ever seen before.
Chastising her. What are you going to take my other eye?
Mm-hmm. Janine says, "I see you," to Lydia. And I thought that was probably the worst thing that she could say to Lydia, because Lydia is all about her image, you know, of this strong, pious, you know, regulated, disciplined person. And she doesn't want to be seen. Lydia asks Janine for help, and she seems to actually be turning a corner. I mean, I'm curious to see where that goes. Is she turning over a new leaf? I just don't know. It seemed honest.
To me, there's two parts of Lydia's personality. There's the brutality and cruelty, and then there's the sanctimoniousness. And I think she's trying to turn the corner on the brutality. And I think there's been a build up to that. Like last week, she was chastising herself because God's punishing her, you know, with Janine being hurt because she said something about her own anger. And so I think she's feeling guilty about how she's behaved, but she's full of religious aphorisms still about how the most pious are the ones that are saved or whatever she's saying. And so I think, you know, I don't want to say too much about the testaments, but in my opinion, if you've read the testaments, you'll know what I mean. And if you don't, I don't think this will spoil too much, but I don't think the way the show did Lydia really matched up with the testaments. And so I think they're trying to push her more towards that in a way that makes sense for the show version of Lydia. Because I really think that Lydia believes in Gilead to one degree or another. I don't think it's, you know, for show or anything, but I think, yeah, she's maybe starting to be disillusioned with it now. And Janine has a real influence on her, which is fun to watch. Like you said, the power dynamic is shifting. That's what I think. But I can't really tell for sure.
And I thought that Janine also has a desire to help and mother the other girls. And it seems to make them unlikely allies, the two of them. Mm-hmm. I know I talked in the last episode about Janine maybe becoming an aunt. And I'm still curious about if that's the direction they're going in. And I thought the last scene with all the other girls coming and surrounding Janine, and they were all hugging each other and offering words of comfort, I thought that was really nice. We haven't seen Janine get anything good in so long that yeah. It made me happy to see that she had some comfort from other people, much like she had from June and Moira in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt like Janine really, like you said, Wendy, she called Lydia out a few times, because when Lydia was talking about having more compassion and wanting to know early on if there were problems, Janine just said to her, "So you can do something terrible, because that's what you've always done."
Yep.
And
yeah,
Lydia also fired back earlier when Janine was talking about her taking her eye. Lydia came back with, you know, "It's all under the guise of keeping you safe." So now we're hearing this, you know, a couple of times about keeping them safe. Okay. That's a really, there are other ways to go about it than
yeah.
taking someone's eye.
Taking
or
someone's eye.
And they're that's not pretty safe extreme. If you're turning them over to men that can do whatever they want with them. They're
yeah.
not safe.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she's saying you're alive. So that's mm-hmm. that's a win for
but, her.
But
yeah.
she's also sent people off to the colonies, right? Mm-hmm. And she's been really cruel.
Ordered mm-hmm. their clitorises surgically yeah. removed.
She's been yep. very, very cruel. So now I think she's feeling bad about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think no matter what they do with her character going forward, I'm always going to remember every bad thing she did, because I don't want to just say, "Oh, well, you know, isn't it great that Lydia has changed or she's getting better?" No, she was a vile person in the beginning.
In a situation like this, you know, a couple of different characters come to mind. There's Negan in mm-hmm. Walking yes. Dead, and there's Serena. And Serena, when she was handing Nicole over to June, I felt the most sympathy and connection and compassion with her than I have at any other point in this show. But she's erased all of that for me at this point. She went mm-hmm. back on it for one thing, wanted to get Nicole back. But if a character does reprehensible things like that, I don't ever want to forget it either. I don't want to no. just forget it. But I also, if they, what they need to do to have any amount of redemption for me personally is to show self-awareness that what they did was wrong and to show remorse over it mm-hmm. and to change their ways. If they can yeah. do all those things, then that goes a long way.
Well, I think she tried. I mean, going to Lawrence and wanting them
yeah.
to be located at the Red Center, I think she's now really aware of the abuse that goes on when the handmaids are in the homes.
I mean, it's a baby step, but it's something.
Yeah, it's something. Yeah. You know, but Lawrence is right. The pious men are not going to be happy with that. So it's not going to work right now. Or ever, probably, with this leadership that they have in Gilead.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, I wonder if she's just going to start to realize that there's no way for Gilead to be a cruelty-free place.
Yeah, I don't.
More disillusionment with all of it. But she's still trying to make it work with her religious beliefs right now, mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, trying yeah. to make it fit.
I'm intrigued by this storytelling. I'm yeah. intrigued by what they're trying to do.
I, what's her name? Ann Dowd? So good. I love yes. watching her.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
So that's my favorite part of any Lydia story is just
I can't find my copy of Testaments. I've been wanting to go back and read that yeah. because of these episodes, and I can't find it. I'm thinking I lent it to somebody.
Uh-oh.
I've been putting it off, like, doing it until, like, at least after this season.
I would wait. If you can, yeah, I would wait till after season 6.
Yeah, I think yeah. that's just better. Like, maybe it's better, since the two of you have read it, yeah. I'm coming in with completely a different perspective. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a good idea. Yeah, I think I might wait just to keep that different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy, did you have anything else that you wanted to add? Okay. So, we have talked about so many of my points already throughout this episode. I will share this, though. I think June and Serena, long-term, outside of this show, when everything moves on, there are always adversaries that you remember from different shows. This is one pairing that is going to stick with me beyond the end of this show. Because the two of them together, it's just impeccable how they've been able to make it so compelling.
5 seasons worth now.
Yeah. Keep it going. Yeah. Because, I mean, I just remember with Walking Dead, 2 seasons of the Negan oppression drove me up the wall.
Yeah.
But with this, it's just different.
I'm really happy they changed direction a bit in season 4 because it was starting to get that way for me by the end of season 3.
Yeah.
Another season like that, I don't know.
Yeah, I think what they did, they pivoted and made it, they made the world bigger is what they did.
And I love that.
And that changed it.
And it wasn't just constant suffering anymore for June. I mean, she's still suffering from like PTSD and having her daughter out, but at least she was somewhere better.
Even just seeing the handmaids rush in their red garb, it just puts this feeling on the scene that's not good. So we need those Canadian scenes to balance it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we earned them over the first 3 seasons. It's like those check boxes.
Yeah.
You've made it through the first 3 seasons. So now you can move on. It's another level in a video game. Now you can move on to this level where you can actually enjoy it.
Until
a little bit more.
Canada becomes Gilead Part 2.
Oh my goodness. I hope not.
Not funny. Not funny. No, I mean, I hope not too. Like, I don't want the show to go back to where it's just
all
oppression all the time. But
no,
I don't know, man. I'll trust what they do, like you said.
Yeah, I do have a lot of trust in them just because they've delivered all this time.
And there's only one more season, so.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, and there are showrunners who are able to stick the landings of finales. And I'm hoping that this team can do it. I think they've delivered so far. So let's keep that positive attitude in this very depressing.
They sure know how to end a season.
Dystopian show. Yes, they do. Oh my goodness. Can you imagine if that had been the end of the whole show? Was that?
I mean, I could have lived with that.
Right. I could have lived with it, right? Because we all were waiting for that. I do, the only thing that I want to talk just briefly about Serena's new life now in this mansion. I got the impression when she was at the center that she was in her element. She was very happy to be in charge of things, talking about paper, that invitations were printed on. She seemed really happy. I'm not sure that this is what she had in mind to be out in the country, because it seemed like they were driving to the middle of nowhere and living with this family. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited, honestly, to watch the next episode and see where they go with this, because I'm concerned that she's going to be living in her own house of horrors there.
That woman wants her baby.
Something is,
interesting.
Yeah, it gave me really, really creepy vibes. Yeah.
And maybe this guy that is supposed to be her guard is putting her in a bad situation on purpose or something. Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Okay. I think something's up.
She's a woman, so she's not going to be in complete control.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'm, we'll see. I'm interested. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, she seemed unsettled.
Episode.
You're right. Yeah, I could see it going.
She was not.
Like,
yeah, she was not. Yeah.
Mark, I want to be an American. Change your mind.
Yes.
I love you, Mark.
Wendy is the captain of Team Mark.
I like her.
I'll take that role.
Yeah, me too. So we are back to Jason. Do you have another point that you want to discuss or some notes?
I'm at my notes. Anybody okay. else have a point? Or should I just go into my notes?
Go right into your notes. Wendy, do you have anything?
I have a little bit left of my one point. I think we talked about most of it.
Okay.
I did want to talk about Mark saying goodbye to Serena, which felt kind of final, but I bet it won't be. And he asks her one last time to reconsider his offer of cutting a deal with them, claiming asylum, and becoming a U.S. citizen. He warns her to stay safe. And it almost had this feel like he was telling her June was going to come after him. He said, this is a free country, which I know you talked about earlier, Jason, and that seemed like a big warning.
Yeah, and for sure.
Everyone is warning Serena about June. Mark says it, Luke says it, Joseph says it, and yet she pokes the bear. She sends an invitation to Offred. The one thing that she knows in the whole world that will push the biggest button, you know, Hannah was the biggest one, but this is probably the second biggest one. She wants to provoke June. It seems like I questioned, like, what's the motivation? Does she want her to take action against her so that, you know, Serena will then gain sympathy with the world? I even wondered, does she want June to kill her and become a martyr? Like, I just can't figure out, you know, what the motivations are, but she's provoking June, even though she knows it's dangerous to herself.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like she is one of those people that just loves to rub people's noses in it and to, like, psychologically and spiritually dominate. Like, you know, the way she trains her dogs is she just grabs them by the scruff of the neck and pins them to the ground, you know, stuff. Maybe that's how you're supposed to train dogs. I don't know. But anyway, I know some people have done that. Yes. And you know, it remind, like, sending that Offred note, or even the way she talked to Luke, just finding his weakest points and pressing her thumb right on that wound. Mm-hmm. And that reminded me of when she grabbed June by the neck back in season one or whatever it was, and just threw her down onto the mm-hmm. floor. You know, it's just like, I'm the boss kind of thing. And I don't know if it's as simple as that. Maybe there's more strategy to it, but it does seem to be the kind of thing that she likes to do a lot.
That was the last of my points.
All right. So Jason, let's get into your notes.
Okay. A couple funny things. I loved when Luke said, June, don't worry, we are going to stop this. And she goes, I'm not worried. And then she digs up her gun. And it was kind of little plot development that it was dirty and couldn't reload the chamber. You know, I've never seen that before, I don't think, but it's a practical thing that can happen. And I thought it worked really well. And then I love that she watched a YouTube video on cleaning a gun. That was so funny.
Because exactly June would do that, right?
Yeah,
June would do that. Of course she would, right?
Because I was like, where would she learn to do that? Yeah, like, what is she going to say? What character taught her? Did Nick teach her? No, she watched a YouTube video.
Of course she did, yes.
And then just a little one that was funny, but when Lydia was trying to help Janine with her physical therapy with the walker, and Janine goes, oh, fuck, sorry. That was kind of funny.
I felt like Lydia really dismissed it too. Like, she didn't really say anything. She was just, she let it go.
Yeah, she wasn't worried about it. Yeah, season one, she would have, like, chopped off her finger or something.
Yes.
I shouldn't joke about that. But anyway, so Lydia, this is not funny stuff anymore, but Lydia has this proposal to keep the handmaids at the Red Center. And one thing about this show, it feels like, weird how small the world feels when Gilead is maybe half the size of the United States, so, or whatever it is. I mean, maybe it only applies to where all the commanders are, so it is a relatively small area, but you would think there'd be red centers all around, right? And so if there was some policy that was going to have any impact, it would have to spread not just to where she is.
Right.
But sometimes it just feels like Gilead is just this one little small town or something, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely not. It's huge.
Yeah.
I would think there's a red center in every city. And maybe this is just the capital.
Right.
You know, even though the capital's DC, maybe this is where the decisions are made and the leadership is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We heard, I think it was from the crazy, like, Serena fangirl at the playground, but didn't she say, what is she, about 14 months old, about Nicole?
Yeah.
So I guess maybe Nicole's about 14 months old. What else? Hmm. I like that June had scoffed at Luke's plan to shut down this Gilead Center by having the authorities come down with some like building code violation. And then it actually worked. The chief fire inspector lost his sister to Gilead and he's shutting down the building for construction violation. That was cool. And then, you know, we talked last week about whether Serena would have slept with Mark, and I don't think I know for sure that she would or wouldn't. There was a moment in this episode where he touched her arm and she looked down at it like, excuse me, sir. But to me, that's because they were in public and yeah, that doesn't go with her public image, you know. But so I wrestle with, is she so devoted to her godly beliefs and ideals that she would never do anything with him? And I think maybe that's true. But if not, if she would have, I think I would have felt even more critical towards her because, I mean, for one thing, I think any woman, Serena included, should be able to sleep with any consenting adult that they want to, right? But she has fully bought into this whole handmaid system and used it and caused a lot of suffering with it. And that's all about subjugating women deemed to be morally compromised. She, you know, June was forced to be a handmaid because she'd married Luke. So if she was so committed to those ideals to the point where so many people suffered and then she just threw those principles away so hypocritically, then I would feel really even more critical toward her. Now, like I said, all the men do it all the time, so they're fucking bastards too. But anyway, I don't know.
I think we talked about this offline a little bit and I said that it's very human to talk about having principles, but most people bend them here and there or break them here and there. And that doesn't mean that they don't still have those beliefs, but they do. I mean, most people break vows and I mean, it's just my experience that the human condition does that. And I think she would do that.
Where she's different from most people is, yes, most people have those principles and then they bend them or they slip or whatever, but most people don't subjugate other people to rape in accordance with those principles and then go and break them themselves.
See, you know what I mean? That's why she would break them. But
I don't like it.
No. I have a question because you've read the books. Are wives allowed to have sex with their husbands?
No, only for procreation.
Right. Yeah. And Serena is pregnant by her husband because they had sex. And that's like a no-no. Like, you're not supposed to do that. Yeah. And so I happen to start thinking about that. I don't think they're supposed to.
But I don't think it's a mortal sin as opposed to adultery or or having sex out of wedlock would be more of a mortal sin.
Yeah, which they're doing when they have sex with the handmaids only. They've conveniently rewritten everything so that it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we don't know. Like, I would presume that if a woman of a if a wife of a commander was caught having an affair, an adulterous affair, that she may be hanged.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, based on what else we've seen on the show, who knows? I don't know. I could be wrong, but something really serious. You know,
I think the wife that was sent to the colonies in season 2 was there because of adultery.
Yeah, that's right.
And they sent her to the colonies to work herself to death. And
So we don't know. Like, I guess you're saying that Fred and Serena, since they both thought that they could not have children, then they shouldn't have been having sex, right?
Exactly. Yes.
But the fact that she got pregnant means that it was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that retroactively it would be fine. I don't know.
I don't know. It's just a question. All along. Yeah, it's just a question I came up with.
Yeah.
I thought about this whole thing, especially because, you know, Serena's got, there's all these rules she has to follow. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
When do you think she's going to have the baby? Do you think that'll be the finale?
Oh, I hope so.
I'm just curious.
If she stays where she is, I think Alana is going to carry the baby away from her. So, again, I don't know. Maybe that's too soap opera-ish for this show to have someone do that, but I don't know.
I don't think so. I think they could do it in a way that would work for the show, because it's all about the low birth rates and people wanting babies.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, honestly, that would probably be justice for Serena for what she's done.
I don't think it'll be that simple, though.
No. I don't think it's that simple, but we'll see. We'll see. We're going down a path. All right. We are good. So we're going to take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us. We have some listener feedback this week. I'll take the first one. Louis Bond says, June's nails after Fred's salvaging horrified me. You know, I agree. When she put them in the water, there's something creepy about them. Mm-hmm.
Megan Dolores Rickelman says, so glad this show is back. Three things I'm hoping for the season are more details about Nick's wife and relationship, a Twella backstory, and more details about Nick's war crimes and how exactly he was involved in the USA's downfall. Think we'll get that? Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think so. We'll get at least snippets of all that. I love watching the chemistry between Mark and Serena. I'm just along for the ride to wherever that is heading. I love how Mara can be so honest with June, but I also feel like she needs to cut her a bit of slack. I really would love to see June, Moira, and Luke as a team of enraged survivors working together to get Hannah back and screw Gilead in the process. Moira pinky swore in season one that they'd get Hannah back. I want to see her get back to that promise.
Yeah.
I think we're getting to that, though, don't we? We are,
yeah. I mean, I just want to remind people these emails or messages came in before this week's episode. Yeah. So I think this week, Megan might be happy to see that Moira's cutting her a bit of slack.
Yeah.
Lindsay Schlicht says, I know it was meant to show the brutality and her euphoric state, but man, watching June plow through her breakfast with bloody fingers was so damn disgusting. I could barely watch. All these women digging in like animals covered in blood without guilt to what they'd done felt very much like I was watching Yellow Jackets for a second. When June took Fred out last season, I did wonder at the wisdom in the decision since Gilead still had Hannah. I guess now we are seeing those repercussions. Serena's smile in that last shot gave me the chills. It's hard to imagine any show, even this one, going so far as to kill a child. But like you guys mentioned, the more time that passes, the harder it is to imagine a happy ending for Hannah. Serena and her candlelight walk, closed captioning labeled the people as acolyte. That is such a creepy thought. How anyone could want Gilead is beyond thought, but you're right. The past 10 years have shown us just how insane people really can be. Janine has 9 lives on this show, so I'm not convinced she really is gone. But if she is, what an awful way to go out. After that creepy scene with Commander Putnam and the chocolate, I don't blame Esther for taking herself out, but damn girl, leave Janine be. Sometimes this show drags or annoys me a bit in the storytelling, not much. But one thing I can say for sure, I don't think I've ever seen a more visually interesting show. That was one strangely beautiful funeral.
It was. It was very cinematic. So Adele Milo Hoover says, thanks for posting episode 3 right away of the podcast. Amazing episode 3. June is on fire.
You're welcome. I'm glad you appreciate that.
Fred Weisinger says, I hope Esther Keyes survives. I'm really intrigued by that character, even though she hates Janine.
Me too. I feel like Esther, all the abuse that she suffered, I don't want her to go out like that.
Neither does Janine.
No. No, she doesn't. I mean, even though Lydia kind of does, like, is like ambivalent about it.
And I think we're going to see her again.
I hope so. Yeah.
And I was happy to see Janine was back to herself mentally. Mm-hmm. Not physically, yes, but mentally.
Yeah, agreed.
My Almardini says, man, I didn't pick up on the change in color for Hannah's outfit at all. It was very subtle. Serena wants to marry Commander Lawrence, but he's not having it. I really thought they were going to make her a handmaid and take her kid away when they called the meeting. But instead, they're sending her back to Toronto. We don't want her here. Close call for Nick. June was scary AF at the end.
Oh, yeah.
I guess Mai's from Toronto.
Yeah. Cheryl Lowe says, so much in this episode, but my favorite parts were two quotes. Surface level beauty doing its best to paper over a stunning amount of hypocrisy by Mark Twillo. And Serena, you're an unusual woman. We don't have the proper infrastructure for unusual women to live within our borders. Joseph Lawrence. His dialogue, whoever writes his part, they just know exactly what, I mean, how to do it, because it's just perfect. Mm-hmm. I thought Commander McKenzie was evil. Given Mrs. McKenzie in previous episodes, I thought he might be a kinder, gentler man, but whoa, he is not what I thought at all. I'm glad Janine is alive, but I'm really worried about her psychological state. I'm glad Nick was honest with June, but it looks like McKenzie has it out for him. Not good.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
All right. Jody Morell continues with some insights about her thoughts on Nick. She says, we didn't know at the start of the series that Nick is an eye, and you guys have been speculating that his rise to command was swift and inexplicable. I can see why you're saying that. Nick is an eye. At the beginning of the series, he's the commander's driver. As an undercover agent, he's not only undertaking surveillance on the commander, he's surveilling the entire neighborhood. His intelligence gathering and undercover surveillance efforts within Gilead get him sent to the front for a bigger role. I think he must have been particularly good behind enemy lines because he's so good at his job. It's difficult for us to know whether he's a double agent now or not, but I suspect he is because of what he did for June. But most of all, I think he's ready to take Gilead down because of his new wife. He's confided in her and told her all about June. Their household doesn't run like an average commander's household. He most likely tells her about his work, which is a huge no-no in intelligence, especially a Gestapo-like organization such as the Eyes. Most of all, I think he's ready to betray Gilead because his wife so clearly has a limp. In the beginning of Gilead, anyone disabled or damaged was disposed of. But Nick is powerful enough to not only take a wife, but to take a damaged wife. He is powerful enough now to protect her. I think his power is rising as a commander, and he is skilled enough as an eye and an undercover agent, and has enough allies to be able to work towards taking Gilead down from the inside, and he doesn't expect to survive it. I love him. I think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just
kidding. I that brings
he's
me
so
back
good
to
at his job. He can just have a blank look on his face and we don't know where he's coming from.
That takes me back to a scene that I think we saw. It was a flashback from the beginning, like when June first got taken, captured, and it was a whole bunch of like disabled or special needs children, yes, being rounded up. Oh, see, this is that why was... I don't rewatch this show.
No, you can't. I don't feel like you can.
I know.
It's too much. Yeah, it's rough. I've rewatched parts because I want to, like, confirm
something.
Yeah,
I've done a few scenes here and there trying to find something.
Yeah, but I'm definitely not going to rewatch. It's not going to be a binge rewatch anytime soon.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Okay, we have one call from Archmaester Rennie.
I am really glad that Handmaid's Tale is back and that this podcast is back. I thought the first three episodes of this season were really good. I never know quite where they're going to go, and I'm happy to go on the ride with them. I wanted to respectfully disagree with something that Jason said in the podcast for episode 3, that Fred and Serena are sincerely religious and that Serena wouldn't have sex with Mark Tuello because she's sincerely religious. I don't believe that Fred and Serena have been sincerely religious. They're using that religion and trying to instill sincere belief in others in order to control them. Were Serena sincere in Gilead's brand of religion, she would have been subservient to Fred because that religion preaches that women should be subservient to their husbands. And Serena was never subservient. And there was always a power struggle between the two of them and a power struggle to try to get Fred to the top of the Gilead hierarchy, which would allow Serena to rise with him. And I see them using religion and using other people rather than embracing sincerely this religious belief. So I hope nothing ever happens between Mark Tuella and Serena because I like him and I see her as a monster and I don't want him involved with her. But she has wiles of her own kind and he may fall into them. Anyway, it's great listening to you, even when I have a disagreement, and I think that is great that this show provokes so much conversation. Thanks, y'all.
Thanks, Rennie.
I love Rennie. Great to hear from you.
That was
great. It's great. Yeah, I think, I mean, I always say when I podcast with somebody, don't be afraid to disagree with me. I mean, hopefully I don't even need to say that, but I just want to make it clear that I think it's, if two people on a podcast think different things, it can be more interesting. Because then you have a lot of conversation about it and listeners as well. So I'm really glad you did that. My take on it is I think religion leaves so much open to interpretation that it's really easy for a person like Serena to actually believe that she's an agent of God, but to still find ways of rationalizing why she's not acting like the model Gilead woman. And I still think she does believe that she's an agent of God. And I think a lot of what she's doing is because of a lust for power, but I think that she may not want to admit to herself how much of it is power over just being pious. You know, I could be wrong. Maybe it's all just a total act, but I think it's not as simple as that. I still think that.
I think you can use religion for bad things to manipulate and do bad things and still believe and still...
And I think she does.
Believe that you believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. People do it all the time.
But I still think she would.
She'd bone Mark. Yeah. Fair enough.
I feel like we need to call a casino in Vegas to set up a betting pool. Will she or won't they this season? Yeah.
I'd like to see him spurn her. But then if they actually ended up, I don't think they will. I really don't. No. But if they actually ended up together, I'd also not be mad about it.
No.
I thought it was really fun to see their chemistry, and I'm glad that they amped it up this season, especially that kiss on the cheek. That was really fun. And I don't know what the direction for that kiss on the cheek could have been. It could have been Serena gives Mark a kiss on the cheek, which sounds, you know, very innocent. But and then Yvonne Strahovski's go, I'll show you a kiss on the cheek.
All right. That's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out our other shows. I think we have so many going on right now.
The newest is Andor. Have you guys seen that?
I have not.
The Star Wars show?
It's a prequel to... Kenobi.
This is different. It's... Yeah. It feels more like a spy show, and it's more gritty and more mature. It's more adult than the other Star Wars shows, more adult feeling. I think it's really good, and I'm curious. Yeah, I think it'll be really fun, too, to hear Jonathan and James. I think James is Australian. Jonathan is. So, anyway, yeah, I really enjoyed that. They put out the first three episodes all at once, like they did with Handmaid's Tale last year.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Greg and Penny are having a lot of fun on She-Hawk.
Yeah.
They are.
That's a great show. I enjoy that show. Mm-hmm. It's a show you wouldn't expect to be such a... Or maybe you would expect it, but it's a fun comedy, and yet there's so much argument about it.
Right.
It's great. We'd appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating or a review on your podcast platform of choice. We have a link in the show notes where you can go to podcastica.com and find where we are on all the platforms if you need that.
Next time on the podcast, The Handmaid's Tale, Season 5, Episode 5, Fairy Tale.
I'm just picturing a really nice, happy episode.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. I'm not sure about that. I don't think any episode of the show is happy.
I hope it's not like one character hallucinating for the entire
episode. Yeah, no.
We had enough of that. Maybe it is some kind of twisted fairy tale at this house that Serena's at.
Yes. There are dark fairy tales.
Yes. Agreed. All right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Step joyfully. You aren't in Gilead. This is a free country.